Have you ever wanted to start your own business, but you don't have that next brilliant idea? Maybe you want to start something in the sports industry, but you don't know what you do. Or maybe you're in the real estate world, but don't know how to branch off and do your own thing. Today, I sit down with an entrepreneur who did just that. Came up with the next brilliant idea, founded the company, and then grew it all the way until he took it public for over $1 billion. The best part? He tells you exactly how to come up with the next great idea yourself. Keep listening to find out how. Let's get started. Welcome to Business Isn't Hard. Today, I'm joined by Paul Fiore, a legendary entrepreneur in fintech and a driving force behind innovation in the credit union space. Paul is the executive vice president and a partner at Credit Union Wealth Next, where he's working to redefine wealth tech for credit unions. But his entrepreneurial track record goes way back. In 1995, Paul co-founded Digital Insight, one of the first companies to bring online banking to credit unions and mid-sized banks. He grew the company from founding it to over $100 million in revenue and took it public before it was acquired by Intuit for $1.3 billion. That is crazy. Since then, he's launched and exited multiple fintech ventures, including Credit Union Wallet and DoubleBeam, and he's held leadership roles at companies like Green Dot and Tabbed Out. Early in his career, he served as a CFO of a $400 million credit union and spent time at Lehman Brothers and Continental Bank. From building technology platforms before fintech was even a word, to raising venture capital, going public, and driving industry-wide change, Paul has done it all. We'll dive into his story today. Thank you so much for being here, Paul. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for that nice introduction. Pleasure to meet you.
Of course. Yeah, it's great to meet you too and have you on. I'd love to, obviously you've done so much. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, your story and how you've gotten here today?
Yeah. You know, as an entrepreneur, I feel like it's a journey to start with an idea and then figure out what is going to help make that idea a reality. And that comes from finding out who the customer is going to be, who your co-founder is going to be, how to raise capital, how to get traction, and basically, you know, go from zero to 100. So I don't know, my first advice for budding entrepreneurs is starting with an idea. And you can't really have an idea until you understand a problem. So in my journey, I was a banker. I was the CFO for a credit union in Manhattan. And the goal was, how do we help our members? They want a new product, let's say car leasing or loyalty points on credit cards, or they want to access their accounts when at home. How do we build that for them? And in the world of credit unions, there are no engineers at the financial institution, right? For the most part, there are 40 or so companies. They're called core vendors, companies like Fiserv and FIS and Jack Henry and others. And their role is to make a product that pretty much is the core engine behind helping the credit union run. And that is then the gatekeeper, because if you're an executive of a credit union and you need a new product and that company isn't delivering the product that you need, you have to then go out and find it. So the entrepreneurial journey starts by saying, wow, here's a product. In my case, it was, how, as a banker, do we have software so that the consumer could check their account balance 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at their house, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't build a branch in everyone's house, right? But everyone has a computer and a modem. How do we make that happen? So that's kind of the start. What is the idea? And then there was kind of a breakthrough moment. In my case, it was April 22nd, 95. It was a Saturday afternoon and I was in San Antonio and I saw a browser. So before I saw the browser, I was going down the path of helping build a product for this core vendor for credit unions that use modems and telephone banks and software. You actually had floppy disk and you'd have to mail it. You have to depend on whether they had PC or DOS or Windows or what, or Mac. So when I saw the browser, it was like the aha moment that I understood the problem. Banks wanted a branch everywhere. I understand the role of the software vendor, the core banking vendor who needed to build it. But there was this unique thing that happened that changed the rules. It completely removed the need for software because the browser is the software, right? And, you know, today it's AI. In the past, it was the PC, the invention of the computer, then the App Store, and then mobile devices, the internet. There's always, every 10 years or so, some breakthrough technology. So my advice is kind of pay attention to the things that are happening that are new and changes that changes the way software is delivered or solutions are delivered. Mm-hmm. And then it's, okay, now you have this great idea. what do you need, right? And most entrepreneurs, they basically hang out with people with the same skill sets, right? So two engineers start a company, two marketing people start a company. I realized early on that I'm not the engineer, I'm the business person. So let me find an engineer. And I found the smartest person at the company. His name was Daniel Jacoby, and he became the co-founder and CTO. And we complemented one another brilliantly, you know. And then you're filling out your team. And the, you know, best advice I ever got was from our first venture capital investor, who said, A people hire A people, and B people hire C people. And it's interesting, because when you realize how important every single person is, from staff all the way to a co-founder, that's your company, that's who you are, and how far you're going to go is the quality of the people you surround yourself with.
So we'll start at the beginning. Obviously, you have a career in the credit union industry already. So I think it's important that you were able to, learn to speak that language. You understood the problem, which, was step one. You saw, like you said, was it scary for you, or like, how did you feel about jumping off and starting something yourself? I mean, I'm
Yeah.
assuming you had a pretty secure, position at the credit union, and all of a sudden you were doing something that
Yeah.
did you know would work? Like, what was that transition like?
So it was interesting. So I at the credit, and it was from, you know, for 5 years span. And then I went to the core vendor for 10 months, and that's, I started Digital Insight 10 months into the journey at the core. So I had already went from a not-for-profit financial cooperative, you know, which is like, hey, how do we serve the member, give them more product, lower our fees, et cetera. Then going to a core vendor who's a for-profit enterprise, and they got to make it, you know, they got to build the software and make a margin on that before they could, you know, pay themselves salaries and everything. So there was it was important for me to see that. And then I wasn't like I knew what an entrepreneur was, or I cared. I didn't even know what venture capital or the word VC stood for. But when I saw the browser, it was impossible not to make that leap, because I felt like it had to be done. So probably 50 people were thinking about the same idea at the same time. The best way to describe it, I remember years later, I went to Hawaii, and I was, you know, walked into this area where a bunch of cars were parked, and we could hear a splash, but didn't see anything. And it looked like an area where you could climb up like a hill and jump into the water. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go up there and check it out. And I remember walking up there and thinking, you know, I had no intention of jumping. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But while I was walking up, like eight new cars pulled up, and they were all with their cameras out, and they saw me on the top. They're all like, "Hey, okay, well, we got you. We'll record it," you know. And then I remember thinking, "I don't need to jump. I don't have to jump. Let me just look over the edge and see," you know. And it was this whole thing about, there was one moment where I'm like, "Okay, I'm going to jump." And you know, there's a little puddle there. I'm like, "Okay, I got to go out far enough not to hit the rock." And but it, the fun wasn't going down. Wasn't splashing, it wasn't swimming back up, and wasn't going back to the side, you know, to get out of the water. The fun was when my brain told my knees to bend, and that there's no turning back. At the point at which your knees bend and you make that commitment mentally to leap, that's the entrepreneurial journey. There's no coming back. There's so many people I know that try to start a company and keep their full-time job, or do it as a part-time venture. There, you know, I called my first investment enterprise PIE, PIE, and it stood for the three things I thought mattered, which are passion, intensity, and endurance. If you're not passionate about something, you're never going to be willing to stay up all night or get up early to do it. It's really got to be a passion. And intensity, there's a lot of people that, you know, they could be intense, but not for a long period of time, right? So endurance, and there's a lot of people who could do a job and be really just average at it for 30 years and never succeed. So it was maintaining and enduring that intensity over a long period of time. And then it's part of, you know, when you have that commitment, it's a leadership trait for the people that see you, because everyone thrives off of who's around them. And if the people around you are lazy and not working and don't care, complaining about the boss, then, you know, that's the culture of the company. But from the top down, if the culture is we care, we're going to work hard, we're going to be competitive, we're going to beat everybody else, that transcends.
Was it hard for you to, especially once you were hiring people, to keep that, to like really define that culture and keep it going? Did it come inherently in the hiring process, like you were trying to hire for that culture, or was it something you had to build after they were hired, or what did that process
Yeah,
look like
that's a
for you?
great question. It reminds me of a great story. So when we were hiring a lot of people really fast, and my co-founder Daniel told me, Paul, you know what I hate? I hate when we have a candidate in the room And I don't know what you're thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking. And we ask to step out of the room and then we decide their fate. And then if we come in and say, we'll get back to you, they probably know we're not going to hire him. Or we come back in and make him an offer. So he came up with this codified system where it was based around music, where if he asked the candidate, do they like music? He's telling me, hey, I like this guy. What do you think? You know? And if I said, hey, do you like Pearl Jam, which was the top band there in 95, I was basically telling him, I'm ready to make an offer if you are, you know? And like, so there's this whole little game that we would play. And it was funny because it looked like he and I were like completely in sync because we'd be like, okay, great. Well, we'd like to offer you the job. And they'd be like, wait, don't you guys want to talk about it? I'm like, no, we've already talked about it. And they didn't know we were talking about it like behind their scenes. As we got bigger, we couldn't interview every candidate, but we did in the first Friday of every month, all the new people would introduce themselves. And Daniel and I would meet with all the new hires that month. And basically say, you know, what is culture? How do you make a culture when you have 100 people growing to 200, right? So let me just tell you two examples of someone that got promoted and someone that got fired. I won't say the names, but I'll
Okay.
tell you the traits that we witnessed that either excited us or turned us off about that candidate. And, you know, we tried to codify it as, hey, you know, one big important trait is intellectual honesty. You know, at our company, you don't say what you think we want to hear. If you notice a problem, you can't be afraid to stand up and point to it. You can't be afraid to call out somebody else. You know, it's not just telling the truth, it's or not lying. It's being intellectually honest about everything. That was one example of one cultural trait that I think defined our company that we tried to instill.
First of all, that's a really cool tactic. I never would have thought of that. That's so interesting. And so as you're growing, you're bringing all these people on. And even before that, I'm curious, was there ever like a time where you didn't know if it would work? Like was it or did you always just kind of have that innate like I this is it. Like this is I know this is going to be successful. 'Cause I'm sure for a lot of people who are starting their business, that is something that's always in the back of their head.
You know, Digital Insight was very unique because my co-founder was a brilliant engineer. So he was building the product and he told me, give me 6 months, right? He's like, you got to get us the first customer. So I basically thought about him like, okay, I need a credit union that's not afraid to take a risk, someone who was first. You know, so I called up one of the associations and I said, hey, who was the first credit union in America to have an ATM machine? I'm like, wow, good question. We'll call you back. They call me back and they said, hey, it was a credit union in Plano, Texas, named Community Credit Union. The CEO's name is Gary Bass. They were the first credit union in America to have an ATM machine. So I pick up the phone, I call Gary. I'm like, Gary, I don't know if you know me, but you know, I heard you were the first credit union to have an ATM. He said, oh yeah. And he told me the whole story. I'm like, how would you like to be the first credit union in America to have internet banking? And he said, what's internet banking? And I said, it doesn't matter, you're gonna be first. You know? I'm like, we'll build it. And here's all I ask. In 6 months, we'll come back and I'll do a demo. If you like it, we'll come up with a fair price. If you don't like it, there's no obligation. All I ask is that you invite four of your peers, CEOs of four other credit unions, to come to the demo. So when I give a demo and I fly in, I have other prospects as well. So he said, deal. He wind up flying out to California because we hosted his website and built his website in preparation for the online banking component. And then 6 months later, I flew to Plano, Texas, and I went in the room. And he was slick. Like he was a community credit union as opposed to an organization like AT&T or IBM, you know? So he didn't want anyone from Dallas, Plano area in the room. So he had credit unions from Houston and San Antonio and Austin, right? And, you know, I never forget like the first demo I gave, I explained to people, hey, well, here's what's going to happen. Here's a web browser by Netscape. We are on a modem connected to Southwest Bell. Southwest Bell is going over the internet back to our headquarters in Calabasas. We have a private Sprint frame relay network that connects our organization to that room over there at the credit union in Plano, their data center. They run a system called X Focus XP by XP Systems Corporation. We then have their computer have a modem that dials one number, white labeled number, back to our data center. It's hardware encrypted, software encrypted. We're then going to put it over SSL on a browser and send it back over the internet, back to Southwest Bell, back to this laptop. And I knew that everyone in the room was thinking this is going to take 24 minutes. And I knew it was going to take a half a second because it's the speed of light. And this was the only transaction on our network because it was the first account we ever had. So I hit enter and it came back confirmed. I paid like $100 towards his car payment or something for the CEO log into his account. And everyone in the room's mouth dropped, and they all wanted, and they all signed up that day is the short version of it.
Oh,
And
that's so
so, to
cool.
answer your question, every demo we did, we'd sign a client because it was so powerful, you know. And every client we sign starts with zero users. So if you have a credit with 100,000 consumers, they start with zero, then they'll have one, then 10, then 20, and then 50. I would do a same store sales analysis where I could map each credit union timeline-wise based on when they launched, how many have been live for 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. And I could tell for certainty that a credit union with 100,000 members was going to have 45,000 of those members enrolled in online banking after 28 months, whatever the number was. So if you do the math and you extrapolate out the revenue, I was never concerned that it wouldn't make it. I would tell my dad when I went back to New York, hey, you know, he's like, what would you wish for? I said, I wish I could turn the clock ahead 6 months because in 6 months, there's 18 credit unions that are piloting that haven't launched yet. They're going to add 50,000 members, you know. So I could do the math on a spreadsheet and quantify that this was going to be a huge business without any doubt or uncertainty once the product was available for sale. Before that, yes, you know, well, is this a business? How much is it going to cost?
That is an incredible story. It was growing so fast then. I mean, for you to just go into first demo, have everybody sign up, and then thousands and thousands of people are joining this. Obviously, you're hiring a ton of employees to keep up. Was it hard to keep up with your growth then? Like, I mean, if you're going that fast, I'm sure it's probably like things are changing every single day.
We had a pivotal moment in the company where we were growing and we had two friction points. We had our sales group who wanted to sign up new credit unions, and some of those credit unions say, hey, we'll sign this agreement for 5 years at this rate if you promise to do an integration to this particular company out in Arizona, right? And our sales team would commit to that. Right, and put it into the agreement. And then our engineers would have to fulfill that. They'd have to do that integration to that core or build out that new feature, you know, that new client wanted. And then we had an operations person and we had a bond because our company was called Digital Insight and everyone calls it Digital Insights with an S, you know. And she worked at Nordstrom and she used to be laughed at everyone called Nordstrom's, you know. So, you know, we both would laugh about the dropping the S. And her name was Jenny. And Jenny came in my office one day crying, saying, we have 100 clients, and all you guys do is make commitments to the new ones. What about the ones assigned 2 years ago? They want fixes, they have enhancement requests, they have problems and bugs that they want to get worked on. And so we basically, I mean, I just went back to every client that we made a promise to. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't deliver. If you want to cancel the contract, we'll cancel it. But we had a thing called Operation House Cleaning, and we put 100% of our engineers onto enhancements and bug fixes and things that our old clients wanted. And, you know, taught me a lesson. Not one new client quit. You know, they all loved it. They all thought, hey, we're going to be an old client one day too. And we respect that you guys are, you know, not going to honor this commitment because you want to fix things from the past. And it
Interesting.
actually helped us more than anything because they had more confidence in us that we would be honest and focus on the customer.
Yeah, very transparent of you. That's really cool. And so to summarize, that was a huge, you went from founding it and then just growing insanely. And a lot of it, I think, came from obviously your leadership and what you did, but a lot of it was the idea too. And that was something you spot in the beginning when you opened that computer for young people or just any entrepreneur now. I know you talked a little bit about like how technology evolves and there's a huge evolution every 10 years. As far as like really finding or spotting that next like aha technology or just any idea to start a business, do you have any advice for looking for those opportunities, finding them, and then, acting on them?
If you asked me this in 1988, I would say do it around a personal computer. If you asked me this in 2011, I'd say do it in an app. If you ask me this now, I'll say do it in AI business, right? Because the game-changing technology is only an advantage for people that embrace it and figure out a way to use it. The people that are already in the marketplace working, they don't have the time. They're too busy to learn AI and to figure out what the impact is going to be on them, right? So take the advantage of whatever the newest technology is today, which today is AI, right? It could be blockchain and others as well. And then figure out the industry. And if you hopefully it's an industry you love and understand. And then a function, you know, it could be the accounting function, the legal function, the HR function, right? So almost every industry plus tech revolution plus function, there's a company that could be born to solve for that, right? To reduce the number of full-time equivalent, reduce manual labor, to automate a process that should be automated. So if you work for a mortgage company, you might want to automate the underwriting procedure. I mean, it's endless number of things that need to get reinvented. Pick one big, pick one that you understand, and pick one that you love.
Yeah. Oh, that's really great advice and really straightforward advice. So I really like it. Do you think that it's super, I mean, you started in the credit union industry for a while, obviously worked your way up to CFO. Would you recommend for a kid graduating that they should spend some time in industry first to understand that, right? And to learn what the problem is? Or is it something where they can try to go out and then learn as they're building? Does that make sense? Like, I wonder what like a recommended path would look like.
There's multiple ways to get to the end. Like, so I have a nephew who's doing sales at a solar company, right? So maybe the solar company is or isn't the industry he wants to be in for the rest of his life, but this skill to learn how to do sales is transferable to any industry, right? But it's going to be easier for him to get another job at a higher pay at a bigger promotion at a solar company because they're going to see it on his resume and they're going to go, oh, you already know our industry. I don't have to teach you our industry. But if you switch industries, you got to commit to it, right? Every part of the lingo, the thing is when you're in industry long enough and someone says a name, you don't just know the name of the company. You know the CEO, what headquarters they're in. You've been to their facility. You know their executive team. If you go to a new industry, you got to relearn that, but you could do it if you're hardworking enough. You can map out the names of the companies, the cities, So for example, in our industry, if we signed up a company, a credit union, and they were one of 500 credit unions happening to use a product from a company called Users Incorporated, we could say, yes, in fact, I'm going to Pittsburgh for their annual conference next month, and I know Joe Barry, and we've presented. Like, it's no longer like, oh, we'll work with the company you want us to work with. Like, no, we know the people at the company that you need us to work with. They know who I am. They know who we are. We've had conversation. If you're an executive at credit and you're making a vendor selection decision, you don't want to say, do you work with Symitar or do you work with Corelation or do you work with Jack Henry? And they say, who is that? Right. Right. So there's a amount of the pre-work you have to do if you switch industries that you don't have to do if you stay in the same industry.
I think that's a really good point. That's something I've learned from being in the credit industry a little bit is everybody knows people. You really dive into that bubble, which is really cool. I'd love to get into a little bit of a lightning round here. The first question is, what is your favorite business book or podcast?
Positioning by Rees and Trout is a book on marketing that's probably out over 30 years. Its essence says that people are over communicated. There's too much bombardment with messaging. And so people tend to put things in boxes. And if someone owns that box, if you make, Kleenex, it's called the Kleenex, it becomes a verb, right? And then if you're also trying to compete with Kleenex, you're really in trouble because they already own the position as the player in that space. They use examples like Xerox and tons of examples of big, well-capitalized companies that failed trying to get out of their current space. Like AT&T tried to make a PC and Campbell's tried to make pasta sauce and, epic $100 million plus failures. So that book was instrumental because it taught me that there already was a product in the world of the mind of the credit union that said PC banking, which was modem and software. And I never said we're PC banking with the internet. We said, no, we're not PC banking. We have nothing to do with PC banking or home banking. We have a new product called internet banking. And that solidified that digital insight equals internet banking. And I got that directly from that book. And I actually just reread it again not too long ago on an audio.
Oh,
You
wow.
know, people learn a lot from that book.
That's awesome. No, I love that. What is your biggest pet peeve in business? I'm sure you've seen a lot.
I think just people being really direct and honest. People tend to not say what they mean, beat around the bush. Something as simple as in a small world like our industry and credit union, if someone gets fired, for example, and then you talk to them, you're like, oh, I decided to leave and try some, and I know the person that fired them. It's almost like you lose credibility because they're not smart enough to know that word's going to get out anyway, right? So just be direct. Hey, they came in and fired me. I'm going to land on my feet somewhere. I'm not worried. It just wasn't a fit with the new CEO that came in. And the really good people are the ones that are intellectually honest, that they'll come out and say, hey, this is really what happened. You don't have to read between the lines and understand that they're just BSing.
Yeah, intellectual honesty seems to be, a theme throughout your whole journey. Now, obviously, in the credit union industry or whatever industry an entrepreneur is in, they know everybody, like you said. What is your best networking tip, especially for those who are kind of getting into the industry or students? How do they really get to know those like major players or just people in the industry in general?
I remember at Digital Insight, a kid calling me up and saying, "Hey, I want to work for you." Like I know banking. I don't never worked in it, but and I've looked at five different companies that offer internet banking services. You're the best one. I want to work for the best one. Can I send you my resume? And no matter how big you get, there's nothing more flattering than someone saying that. But he did his homework. He knew who we were. He knew who our competitors were. Our product was and. He articulated what role he could perform and why it would be wise for me to make a choice. And if I have a choice of three people, I want the one that wants to be here,
Yeah, of course. Interesting. Yeah. Again, that kind of directness, I'm sure, is really appreciated. What is a skill that every leader should have?
Create an energy where people feel like they have a mission, that it's not a job, that they're
Okay.
working on something important. And I know the lightning rounds, I won't go into the long story, but the short version is, I remember when it gave out stock options, I shared with the team, every employee in the company, what we were doing was beyond whatever they would buy from the value these stock options would generate for them. Whatever car or clothes or anything they bought, they would be long gone when they could still feel like I helped build something great and I was a part of that. And I shared a story similar and 10 years later, ran into someone at a mall, one of our employees who told me that that story changed her life, that like that made her wake work late that night and she's never forgotten it. And people want a mission. They want a leader that has, could demonstrate leadership. And as an entrepreneur, you owe that to your employees to give them that sense of purpose.
Yeah, that's such an interesting, like, it's just, I bet that's so hard to do. I mean, there's a lot of companies that fail to do that. So, but it's so important, right? I mean, these people are spending, all of their time during the day really striving for your company. And so the fact that you're able to do that and really give them a purpose is, really inspirational. Okay, we'll finish one last question, the lightning round. What is your go-to method for handling stress?
I play chess online. It forces you have to black out everything or else you won't concentrate and you'll lose. And it's you could keep increasing your rating. It's one of, at golf or anything else, tennis, you'll eventually hit your peak and you won't get any better. Chess, you could hit your peak and then learn more openings, more end games, do more puzzles, watch more videos, and then go up another 100 points. And
Interesting.
I'm older, but I'm still increasing my rating. So I feel like it's a great outlet. It uses your brain, keeps you intellectually sharp, and it forces you to block out everything because if you're thinking about your problems, you're not going to win.
Yeah, you're really getting in the zone. That's I've never thought about chess like that. Like you're always getting better. That's super cool. Okay, well, thank you so much for Paul for being on. I'll end with this one last question. Over your career with Digital Insight and beyond, what has been the biggest core key to your success as a leader?
Hard work. My career was defined early on as being the first one in, the last one to leave. I took night classes at NYU to get my degree, worked the weekends, spent many a
Wow.
night sleeping on the floor. Like a one quick story, we had the last day before we went live with Community Credit Union in Plano, Texas. There was a thing, a button for FAQs. When you clicked it, it said to be done. And it was and 11 o'clock at night, and I remember getting coffee and realizing that no one else was going to write it. I have to write it, and I just stood up all night and wrote it. And I remember 3 years later going to their website and clicking the FAQs, and not one word had changed. It was exactly what I had written that night, doing an all-nighter at the office. And you do that, and I think everyone else sees that, and they want to be part of that energy.
Yeah, and it's driven by at its core like your passion, right? I mean, you truly A believed in it and loved what you did. Anyway, well, thank you so much, Paul, for being on. This is an amazing conversation. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Oliver.
That was Paul Fiore, founder of Digital Insight, not Insights. From the start, Paul followed his own outline behind the next big idea, a piece of technology, an industry, and a function. Paul realized that every 10 years or so, a new breakout piece of technology comes around, from computer software to apps to AI. For Paul, he chose the computer browser, the credit union space, and consumer banking. Once he found his niche, but brilliant idea, he lived by three core principles: passion, intensity, and endurance. At their core, an entrepreneur has to be passionate about what they're doing, simply because of the hours required. Paul never would have slept on the floor or worked through the night if he didn't love it. From there, it's intense. It takes a lot, physically and emotionally. The kicker is that this isn't a phase, it's the reality of a startup. That's where endurance comes in. The most successful entrepreneurs are the ones that stick it out in the long run. At the end of the day, Paul was still able to recall one feeling: when his knees bent. This is what entrepreneurship is about. That feeling of bending your knees, going for it, knowing there's no turning back. Thanks for listening. This week, I encourage you to brainstorm some combinations of an industry, a technology, and a function that can make your life easier at work or in general. Try using AI as the technology and going from there. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in.